Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. We're a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, or different cultures. Today, my visitor is Father Kevin Waldy. Father Kevin, a very warm welcome, and Heide Meyer back to our radio program.
Thank you very much, Beata.
Father Kevin is a Marist father and is originally from Timaru, the South Island of New Zealand, and he's a lecturer in Bible studies at Good Shepherd College. He has come to Muffin Talk a few times, and I'm also happy that he's giving another talk at the Mercy Spirituality Center soon on the 11th of March. Father Kevin Waldy will give a talk on how can we find God in the dark. Father Kevin, I mentioned you work for the Good Shepherd College. I understand that it has recently merged with the Catholic Institute. Is this correct?
That's right. That's right. So the two institutes, one Auckland, where I work presently, and the Catholic Institute of Aotearoa New Zealand in Wellington. So the bishops wanted the two to come together, and we basically are eventually going to be known as the Catholic Theological College. And we are a degree-granting college, so therefore it is going to have its focus on the theological aspect here in Auckland, but it's also given another name, Te Kupenga, which is going to be the overarching name, which also incorporates the Nathaniel Centre and the NCRS, the National Centre for Religious Studies. So it's quite a large body of people in actual fact, but I'm going to be working in Catholic Theological College, which is precisely about delivering theological degrees.
And you have a specialty in your theological studies, is that St. Luke?
St. Luke is my specialty area, but I teach across the spectrum of the Bible. And this semester I'm teaching John, but next semester I'm teaching the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch. So where we focus more on Genesis in particular, but fundamentally I'm trained to teach right across the board, but the New Testament's my area and Luke's my really special area of expertise.
That's also the gospel with a lot of women, isn't it?
Certainly is.
And as
that's
a Marist.
Right.
As a Marist.
It starts basically with the two, Elizabeth and Mary. And so then we learn that Jesus encounters many women along the way and they become very closely associated with the mission, of the good news.
Why did you choose St. John now? Because aren't we in the year of St. Matthew?
We certainly are. And this is the oddity of John. He doesn't have a year in the lectionary that is dedicated to himself because the three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they have a year allotted to them each. And so we systematically work our way through. So what the church has done in the lectionary is to incorporate John into each of those years. And the interesting thing is that in a couple of weeks' time, because now we're in Lent, John will become the focus of the Sunday Gospels. And then in Eastertide, we'll continue with John. And so almost right into the middle of the year, we'll be hearing John. And then all of a sudden, we'll slip back into Matthew. So it's slightly strange, but I think it's really interesting that in these very special seasons like Lent and Easter, we then go with John and the particular focus that he presents to us.
Is that every year?
Every year. Yeah.
So it's every year we have a year of John.
And sometimes you get enormous chunks of John in the gospel. So I think that's quite difficult to deal with on a Sunday basis.
Why don't we have a year of John, just for John?
I don't know why that never happened. I think basically because John is quite different from the others, and therefore you want to get the pattern the three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, wrote using similar sources and have a lot in common, whereas John stands apart. So therefore, if you had him as a fourth year, it might just be a bit jarring because he's quite a different author, and a lot of the ways that Jesus speaks, for instance, is quite different from the Jesus of Matthew, Mark, or Luke. So I suspect that they thought it would be better to insert him into the regular seasonal pattern, and that won't disturb too much our sort of logical reading of, say, Matthew for this year.
Thank you for that explanation. For those of you who have just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Father Kevin Waldie, and we are talking about the Gospel according to St. John. Father Kevin, you will come to the center, to the Spirituality Center, on the 11th of March from 7 to 9, so an evening talk, and you'll give a presentation on Can We Find God in the Dark? Talk about John. The words in John 8:12 come to mind when Jesus spoke again to the people and he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. In this context, your title seems a bit challenging.
It certainly is. It's I think we live in a world that is quite difficult for people of faith. And in New Zealand in particular at the moment, we have a government leadership that doesn't particularly like people of faith specifically, and especially on certain ethical issues, etc. The church has very clear statement to make, and it comes from a faith perspective. Well, sometimes you're not received that well, and you might be cast into the darkness, in actual fact, and so that no other people can see or hear what we've got to say. So I think that John's Gospel in particular gives us a very good sense of what it is to be bold Christians in this world, proclaiming the truth about Jesus Christ and the teaching that's evolved over the centuries. But John is a great place to start, I think, in understanding who Jesus is and then how he came to be truly one of us. And so John's Gospel insists that Jesus came in the flesh. And I think that's a very good place to start if you want to start proclaiming the gospel to our world and to the world of New Zealand in particular. And the thing is that coming to faith in Jesus is like having the light shone on you, that gradually the sun comes up and it gets brighter and brighter, but you've got to be open to see and receive the light. And I think there are a few stories of people, the blind man being healed, for instance. That's a symbol of what it is to come to understand the Christian faith in its fullness. And I think as we look at our world and consider the many dark aspects of it, because every night when you look at the news, it's extraordinary how wicked the world is in a sense, and the horrible things that are happening often to children, whether it be in New Zealand or in Syria or places like that, and your heart goes out to them. And I think to be able to see your way through these dark spots is to let the light of the gospel, and in particular the gospel according of John, enlighten you, as it were. You know, it's one of those things that sometimes we haven't thought enough about, but John's gospel is particularly late in the first century of the Common Era. So therefore, you have quite a significant period after the life and death of Jesus.
So he was the last one who wrote
that. That's right. And normally we'd say, you know, written about 90 or 95. When the early church has started to reflect on all the ramifications of Jesus' passion and death and resurrection. So I think then when you look right at the various episodes that you have in John's Gospel, you see these various aspects of what it is to be in the light and to live in the light. And I think if you go back to the book of Genesis, as you get an echo of that in the very opening, in the prologue, in the first 18 verses of John's Gospel, you know then, in the beginning was the Word. And that is an echo effect of the very first verses of Genesis chapter 1. And so therefore, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the first thing that he created, of course, was light, that everything may be able to be seen. So I think that's vital to the way in which we start thinking about the idea of light and the symbol of light, and the way in which John then introduces us to various other ways of understanding Jesus, so that the light is the beginning where you have the ability to see something, just as God created light in the beginning and then gradually populated the world, the heavens and the earth that he created.
And he saw that it was good.
That's right. And when the human beings were created, he looked and saw that it was very good. And therefore, I think you see immediately what the role of the human beings is to be in the world. And we are to reflect God by our lives. So we're made in God's image and likeness. And that's to really say, because God is not seen, we have to be, as it were, reflections of God's thought and God's being and God's presence in the world. So that what you're doing then is you are living according to the way in which the Torah opens up. So the Torah is the word that's normally applied to the first five books of the Bible, where basically you've got the teaching that Moses has received from God, and then it's set down for the Jewish people to live, and then we receive that in our turn as Christians. And so then John is playing on lots of those ideas that are right there at the very beginning of the Bible. And then when Jesus comes, he is that word that we hear about in Genesis 1, because God speaks everything into existence and it's instantaneous. As soon as God says it, it is, and then God looks and sees that it's good. And then the human beings are the pinnacle of that creation, looks and they're very good. And I think then when John is imitating that sort of imagery and the whole notion of what the human being is meant to be in the light of Jesus Christ, then you know that Jesus came in the flesh. He was really present amongst us. He encouraged us to be one with him and the Father, and then he gave the Spirit. And I think what you've got is a very Trinitarian way of understanding things, but it's a development of the Jewish presentation of God's creative act that we then participate in. So I think, you know, when we have things like light and darkness, we sometimes don't really think too much about those opposites, as it were. And so what he does right throughout his gospel is to pit good against bad, if you like, and to say, this is this of God or not of God? And all the believers are constantly referred to as the children of God. So we are born of God. And then there's that little episode that comes at this stage when the question is asked, be born again, and do I have to go back into my mother's womb to be born again? No, you are initiated into the faith of Jesus Christ, and then you are having a rebirth by being baptized into that Jesus, and then you bring that light to bear on the rest of the world. And so that Jesus, our, which is one of those key concepts in the gospel according to John, he's always saying, my hour has not yet come, and then he always gets to a point whereby he says, my hour has come. And it's here there's a slightly different view of the crucifixion, because the others have got the horror, as it were, of the crucifixion, whereas John refers to it as the hour of glory. And that's the whole purpose. It's almost that beaming light that comes from the crucified Jesus as then he goes to his resurrection and returns to the Father. And then we are meant to take that message on board and proclaim it to the world. And then there will be another coming. So there's a first coming in the flesh, which is Jesus born into our world, suffered, died, rose again, and then he'll come again at the end of time. And the book of Revelation deals very much with that. But that's a whole topic all on its own. So we haven't got time for that today. But, you know, John's Gospel's got plenty in it to keep us interested and occupied and feeding our faith.
And you mentioned that John's Gospel was written about 90 years after the death of Jesus.
So well, we might, depending on when, it's difficult to calculate exactly, but I'd say perhaps 60, 65 years. So if Jesus died about the year 30, then you've got a pretty good idea that's going to be 60, 65 years. You then have to understand, as Vatican II made very clear in De Verbum, the Word of God document, that there are three stages to the development of the Gospels. There is the period where Jesus speaks and acts, so his words and his deeds. Then there's the period of the apostolic preaching. And then there's a third stage when we go beyond that apostolic preaching to the period of the writing of the evangelists themselves. At some distance, perhaps a couple of generations, perhaps three generations by the time John writes. So therefore, you've got to factor into your understanding of these texts the development that would have gone on as people of faith discuss the Christ event, as we call it, and then start to theologize, we might say, not perhaps in the modern sense of theologizing, but starting to talk about Jesus and his relevance and his relationship to the Father and then the sending of the Spirit. So then if you think that at that third level John the Evangelist is writing, then he's writing for a very specific community that's had much time to reflect on who Jesus is. And of course, when you look at John's Gospel, Jesus keeps saying all the time, "I am, I am, I am." And we know that in John's Gospel there are seven "I am" sayings. So that matches the fact that the deeds that Jesus performs in John's Gospel are seven as well. And they're not called miracles, but they're called signs. So therefore, you've got these moments in John's Gospel text, seven signs and seven I am sayings, moments that actually point towards his identity. And in particular, when he says I am, then he's reflecting what was revealed to Moses at the burning bush in chapter 3 of Exodus, where God says, I am who I am. And so when Jesus starts saying, I am, all the time in John's Gospel, everyone pricks up their ears because they hear the divine name. Now, the divine name is called the Tetragrammaton, or it's, technically that just means four letters. And so we in the Christian tradition used to say Yahweh, but it's really the name that you don't pronounce. And so in Judaism, they used to say Adonai. So then the New Testament would pick that up as well. And so when that name occurs in the New Testament, it's called the Lord. Well, the Lord obviously is then applied to Jesus himself. So you can see that there's a lineage in the way in which John is using certain words and expressions that are echo effects of Old Testament moments, but also then pointing to Jesus' divinity.
What are the seven signs? Can you mention them?
So the seven signs are the wedding feast of Cana. So that's the very first one. Now, that's the only unique one. The other six signs are also in the other Gospels. But the others are the healing of the royal official's son, the healing of the paralyzed man, the feeding of the 5,000, then the walking on the water, and then the last two, the healing of the blind man, and then the raising of Lazarus. Now, that's a very interesting point at which the last sign is delivered, because that is more or less the end of the first half of John's Gospel. So all the signs, or miracles, as we would say, are confined to that first part. And then in chapter 13, Jesus then removes himself from public ministry and moves into the upper room and then has private talks with the disciples. And that's in preparation for the passion and death and resurrection. So you'll find then that there is a distinct halving of the narrative where the signs are there. Now, there's an interesting fact that John calls these signs, which are pointing towards something, whereas the emphasis in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, is on the word, what we call miracle, but in actual fact, in Greek, they are called dunamis, and that means acts of power. And so that focus is not in John, it's pointing to Jesus as to who he is in those actions. And I think that's quite a stark contrast. Now, if we go back to something that I just said before, the I Am sayings, they spread out across the gospel. So they're not confined to the first half or the second half, but you get seven of them too. So in chapter 6, we get the first of them where he says, I am the bread of life. And then in chapter 8, he says, I am the light of the world. And then after that, in chapter 10, he tells us that he is the gate or the door of the sheep. So that means that they're held in a place that is strictly guarded, and the shepherd is the gate, basically. So then the next I am saying, he says, is I am the shepherd of the flock. And then in chapter 11, in the context of the raising of Lazarus, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. And then there are two more sayings in chapter 14 and chapter 15, where first of all he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And then the final I am saying comes at the beginning of chapter 15 and is developed in the rest of that chapter. He says, I am the vine. And then he says to those listening to him, his disciples, you are the branches. And I think that's a beautiful image to end on amongst those seven sayings, by talking about the communion we have with Jesus himself. And then he's going to develop that in the next couple of chapters when he says that everyone is to be one in the Father, the Son, and the Spirit.
And it also points to the future, because the picture of the vine and the branches, it's something that even if he's dead, there are still other people who continue the work. The grapes will still grow.
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, this is one of the great things about John's Gospel, is that the images that John puts before us are quite graphic and beautiful and powerful. So they stay with you. And that's something of what I think you have to see, that the gospel comes to us in really revealing ways. And that's just to give a little hint of where I'm going with Do You Find God in the Dark? When you go to the movies, you sit in a dark cinema, and sometimes what you see on the screen is about everyday life, but often reflected in that film is the wonder of the gospel at the same time. And so I never go to the movies thinking I'm going to see the gospel or the Bible on the screen, but sometimes it is there. And so I've got a few little examples on the night when we gather. I'm going to show people exactly how that amazes us. Out of the darkness comes extraordinary light, and it filters into our lives.
So you'll bring some examples of some movies that were...
Yep. I've got four movies that I'm going to use as little examples of surprising ways in which the light of the gospel comes to envelop us, even if we're sitting in the dark.
And then afterwards, when people leave the place, they can do the same work with any other movie. It'll be changing your perspective.
And this is precisely the Johannine thing. We are thinking about what we have seen and what we have heard. And when you go to the movies, that's the same thing, you see, that often you don't notice things until someone points it out. But I love the art of film, so what I'm doing is I'm looking and listening, and you're surprised often what comes, because most people are so involved in the story, they don't hear some of the more subtle elements. And that's exactly what you do in the gospel. You look at the text, you've heard it time after time, but often there's a little gem there that you have to discover. And I think John is supreme when he writes his gospel, and he gives us images of what Jesus says and does that are lasting forever.
And these pictures or images, they are not in any of the other gospels.
There are similar images, but these are much more graphic in John, I think. So it's like the bread of life discourse, which is chapter 6, you know, when he feeds the 5,000 first, and then he's going to move into what we call a very Eucharistic expression, because he's going to say, eat my flesh and drink my blood. Now, they are, in the Jewish context, those are extraordinarily graphic images. And I think they then are part of that whole fabric that's not quite the emphasis of the other evangelists, you know? Even though John doesn't have a Last Supper scene, so therefore chapter 6 is like its substitute, but it's through imagery in particular, and then the graphic nature of eating and drinking, which is common to everyone, but with this added dimension, which is not heard or seen in the other Gospels.
So when we hear the Gospel, we hear the words, we hear the content, but the more we hear it and the more often in different situations, the more we understand of it. And maybe that's something similar to the movies.
Yep.
And we are looking forward to this.
Good.
Thank you very much, Father Kevin.
And you're very welcome.
So, and this, what else is coming up at the Mercy Spirituality Center this Sunday on the 1st of March, 2 to 3:30, we will start our new reflection group, Mercy Global Presence. This is a worldwide opportunity to reflect on mercy values and traditions, to engage in collaboration with others for a globalization of compassion and mercy in our world. Everybody is welcome. And on Wednesday, the 4th of March, Rebecca McGinty is going to give a presentation on aromatic anointing, Jesus, our ultimate healer. And then on Wednesday, the 11th of March, 7 to 9, Father Kevin Uwaldi will come for an evening talk about can we find God in the dark? And then one more event, the Lenten series, as we have just started Lent. On Friday, the 13th of March, we will start this year's Lenten series with Sister Anne Warren and Sister Catherine Wiles Pickard. 4 Friday mornings from 10:30 to 12:30 p.m. This is an opportunity to reflect on the cross through music, scripture, prayer, and times of silence. And for all these events at the center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead. And thank you very much, Father Kevin, for having come to the studio.
It's always a great pleasure to be with you and to talk about various topics.
Thank you.